I think it's dangerous in a company if a company believes that one team is responsible for the customer experience. I think cross-functional teams need to have a shared sense of ownership and responsibility for that experience. And so wherever we can sort of establish that, I think it's important.
Welcome back to another episode of Design to Be Conversation, presented by Design to Be and hosted by Design to Be co-founder and CEO, me, Rachel Weissman. In this show, I have conversations with design leaders about how they continue to learn, grow, and skill build throughout their careers. Each episode will not only help you navigate your career more effectively, but they will even enable you to build better products as a result. Let's dive into it. In this episode, I talk with Amy Ibadu. Amy is the Chief Design Officer at Gusto, where she empowers designers, researchers, and content strategists who are working on products that connect companies with their employees in a meaningful way. Previously, Amy was a Senior Director of UX at Shopify, where she led a cross-functional team of over 130 people working on core business products. During her time at Shopify, she also led the launch of the Polaris Design System, built the platform UX team, and founded the Design Ops practice. In earlier iterations of her life, she was one of the first members of Facebook's now gigantic content strategy team, renovated an old house in the south of France, worked in art museums, and traveled around the world for a year. Amy lives in Canada with her husband, Dan, and small but mighty dogs, Gus and Ella. We dive into the difference and tension between speed and quality, the importance of creating shared language and goals, as well as what are the conditions for quality and velocity, and much, much more. Welcome, Amy, to the show.
Thank you so much, Rachel. It's great to be here.
So when we first started chatting about what we really wanted to cover in this episode, I really loved the topic that you suggested of this idea of speed versus quality. And it's something that one in both my personal and professional life have been thinking a lot about how to navigate that and when it is okay to move a little bit slower to move faster. And really how to balance both of these pieces. And so really before diving into our topic for today, I'd love for you to share a little bit about your background and what got you into design in the first place.
Yeah, sure. So I started my career working in nonprofit arts organizations in Saskatchewan, which is in the middle of the Canadian prairies.
That's so funny. Actually, my brother lives in Saskatoon.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. Yeah, that's a couple of hours from where I come from in the city of Regina. But yeah, so I was working in nonprofits there, which is where I grew up. To anybody who has ever worked in a nonprofit, you'll know that you just wear all the hats. You know, you might have one job title. I was working as the head of communications at an art gallery named the Mackenzie Art Gallery. And what that meant was I did 1,000 things. So I figured out how to create billboards and InDesign for a touring exhibition that we would have. I went on the local community cable network to talk about programs we were doing. I worked with our curator to come up with ways to make our collection more accessible digitally, you know, through our website and through stories that we would tell about objects. So I wore all kinds of hats. And that sort of led me to a second job where I was working for an agency in the UK, in London. And their main product that they were building was a content management system for museums. And these were big museums, like the National Gallery of London was using this CMS. And they had one designer, but he was primarily focused on sort of like visual graphic design, less focused on UX design. And so I was like the closest approximation to a user that they had. And so I was spending a lot of time with the developers, with the team that was sort of building the CMS. I was also doing a lot of work with the community that was using the CMS to kind of bring them in to give their perspective and let us know what was working and not working. And I think that was the first time that I got really deep into the product experience and you know, to sort of the way that somebody moves through a product to get pretty complicated things done in the case of a CMS. And so did that. I was still sort of in a marketing role. And when I left that job, I was like, you know, what are the things that I love about this? And what are the things I want to leave behind? And the things I wanted to leave behind were, you know, like the trade shows, the SEO work, the sort of salesy part of marketing. And the work that I really wanted to double down on was really that UX work and really sort of getting into how somebody navigates a product, how they get their jobs done, how we even know what their jobs are, who is the customer. And I have always been somebody who mediates the world through language. So I understand things by writing about them. I process things in a very language-based way. And so the part of product design that I was really initially attracted to was content design, the way that words work in the context of an interface to help or hinder somebody from completing their tasks and from establishing a clear mental model of the world that they inhabit inside of a piece of software. And so that was when I really started focusing on that as a craft and leaned into that. And then sort of my career went from there and I ended up as a content designer at Facebook and doing my own agency and a bunch of pieces like that up until this moment in time now.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. I can already tell by how you're sharing your story, just the importance of language, and we'll dive more into that. But I'd love to now start to unpack this notion of speed versus quality. And even upon reflecting on my own output over the past weekend, I had a bunch of plans and had a lot of commitments and ideals of what I wanted to get done and really needed to listen to my body and ended up needing to move a lot slower so I could be prepared to have conversations like this and really show up as my 100%. So I'd love to provide a bit of color of why you chose this topic and how you're starting to think about this space.
Yeah, this is a topic that matters a lot to me personally, professionally. It's also something that we're often grappling with at Gusto and have grappled with at other companies that I've worked with. And I think the primary thing that I think happens is that quality and speed are positioned as though they are a choice. So you have to choose one or you have to choose the other. But I actually don't think that they are mutually exclusive. I think with the right conditions, I think we can have both. And I think it's a tension that we need to hold and not resolve. And I think there are lots of ways that we can do that. You know, one of the things that is really top of mind for me is a job that I had a long time ago in my career. I worked in an agency. And in the agency, one of the things that we like to say, and I think a lot of agency people will, this will be familiar to them, is you can have two out of three. You can have it cheap, you can have it fast, or you can have it good. But you cannot have all three of those things at the same time. You have to pick only two out of three. And I think in the context of a company, of a software company, the equivalent of cheap is, have we staffed the project accordingly? You know, have we planned the project accordingly? Do we have the right people on the project? Do we have enough of their attention? You know, are we spreading somebody across multiple complex projects at once? I fully believe that if you can staff a project appropriately, that team is well positioned to move with velocity, which, by the way, is different than speed. Speed is just like, go fast, just go really fast. It's like the Fast and the Furious, you know? Your job is to cross the finish line at any cost in the shortest amount of time. But velocity is momentum in the right direction, in a certain direction. And I think inevitably that's what we want on teams more than we want speed. And I think with velocity, we can have quality if we have the right team and the right amount of focus. And also, I think the two things, velocity and quality, can reinforce one another. So I think when we have the right team and the right focus, we have a clear vision of what we're trying to move towards. And that allows us to ship iteratively and ship high quality and learn from that. And that reinforces quality. One of the things that I've been talking to my team a lot about lately is, how can we be really specific about what quality looks like? You know, rather than talking about some invisible quality bar that nobody understands where it is, but that we're all supposed to kind of leap over it. Like, what are the signals of quality? And can you define that? And can you engage your cross-functional partners in that conversation, that definition, so that you're all working towards it together, rather than it being positioned as something that, you know, only design owns and only design can see and only design can sort of measure and tell you when you've reached the right place.
So tactically, I'm curious how you go about doing that and creating this shared language and creating this grounded understanding between your cross-functional partners.
So in terms of that grounded understanding of quality and that shared language around quality, this language that I'm going to share with you is sort of a work in progress, but there are three sort of phases that I think of when I think about quality. And I think it's helpful when teams have a shared language to talk about these phases so they know what they're aiming for. And so again, working language, the way that I'm defining this is the first stage is feasible, possible. You know, so we're building something new, we're adding a new feature, we're adding functionality that didn't exist before, and that's valuable to our customers. Now, feasible doesn't mean that it doesn't matter what the experience is, obviously. You know, there are certain standards that we have to get to, even with a feasible MVP ship. And for me, those lines are things like accessible. It can't be buggy. There has to be usability such that somebody can easily make their way through the flow from the beginning to the end. And we can assess that by doing some usability testing to understand that. But feasibility isn't our end goal. You know, we always want to scope beyond feasibility. Always, always, always. Our goal is not to have a feasible experience. But when we ship something that's feasible, we can learn something and then we can move towards the next phase, which is true ease of use. So this is integrated experiences. This is making sure that the experience is really connected to what came before and what comes after. It's paying a lot of attention to making sure the patterns are common and familiar. The language needs to be really good at setting expectations. Just like, how can we make this as easy to use as possible? So that's a really important phase to get to. And it's, in my opinion, not okay to scope to feasible if we don't have plans to at least get to ease of use. And then we've got the next phase, which is delightful, magical. This is when the experience really feels like it understands you, like it's responding to you. Gusto is a people platform. So we build software that helps businesses basically look after their people through payroll, benefits, those types of things. And what our goal is when we talk about magic and delight at Gusto is we really want people to feel like when they use Gusto, it's almost like they've hired their own head of people, even if they're a small business. You know, so it's guided. It can predict what you need. It points out opportunities for you that maybe you didn't realize were accessible to you. So an example there might be a lot of businesses in the US actually qualify for what are called R&D tax credits. So if they make something, they can actually apply to the government and they can get this sometimes really substantial amount of money back from the government that they can then reinvest in their research and development arms. But a lot of small businesses, they don't know about it. And if they do know about it, they don't understand the criteria. And if they do understand the criteria, they're intimidated by, you know, all of the governmental red tape that it takes to access a program like this. And so when we're really doing our job in that sort of delightful, magical range, we're not just making it possible or feasible for them to apply for tax credits in Gusto. We're not just making it easy to use and get through the flow, but we're actually really proactive about pulling in all of the information that we have about that business to guide them and make it as easy as possible for them to complete that workflow so that they can access those tax credits and invest them back in their business. And ideally, we want them to walk away from that experience thinking, wow, I thought that would be really hard. I've applied for government programs in the past, and that was surprisingly easy. That was so much easier than I thought it would be. And that's what we, you know, aspire to. We certainly don't always hit that aspirational goal, but if we're consistently aiming at that goal, then we're going to at least hit easy to use, and we're going to sometimes hit that truly sort of delightful, magical space. And so I think giving teams this framework of almost like these three phases of sort of quality or UX or product development, it also gives them a language with which to have these debates and discussions on the team. So, you know, am I working on a project right now that is really aiming at getting something feasible out so that we give customers this functionality? Or is this a delight project and opportunity? And I think having those conversations cross-functionally can help teams understand where to focus, where to spend their energy, and help just align them on the goals that they're trying to set for themselves in their next couple of releases.
So when reflecting on my career a bit, especially when thinking about when I've been a bit more junior, there were numerous moments when I was strongly advocating for creating these, we'll say, like utterly delightful experiences. And not that there's anything wrong with that and should equally be encouraged, but I'm curious how you'd recommend for folks to start, I guess, like prioritizing when it is good and when it is necessary to advocate for delight, when it is necessary and when it makes sense to advocate for simply ease of use, and how folks can start to think about this.
So first of all, this is a framework that I want our cross-functional teams to use, not just designers. So this is something that I've been talking a lot about internally with the design team, obviously, but also our product team and our engineering team and our data team, so that they have that sort of shared vocabulary and language to make trade-offs and have these types of discussions in a more grounded way. I think the question is, what is the value we can bring to our customers in this moment? And so if it's something that doesn't actually exist on Gusto. So for example, until, I don't know, it was like a year and a half ago, we had no ability within Gusto for you to pay an international contractor. Like you just couldn't do it in Gusto. And we saw with the pandemic that a lot of businesses were wanting to use international contractors. They were just wanting to hire great people wherever they happened to be. And we can support them in that. And so it was something that we were hearing about a lot from our customers. And so, you know, the first release of our international contractor payments product, it wasn't important for it to be super delightful. you know, it was important for it to have sort of the functionality that was necessary. It was important for it to be accurate, to make sure that people were paid accurately. It was important for it to be secure. And so I think it's that conversation, like, where are we in this product? Does this exist or not? If it's something new, then the first ship to feasible is probably absolutely fine. But I always want the designers to know what the next stages would look like so that they can talk about it in tangible terms and inspire their teams around it. So for example, it might be fine to ship a feasible sort of international contractor payment product, but it's up to the designer to really understand, okay, well, what will take that to the next level? Like, what are customers struggling with in the feasible flow? What have we heard in usability testing? What have we heard in research? What are the opportunities to make this truly better than, you know, any sort of competitor product in terms of ease of use and personalization and familiarity? And I think if designers have a clear vision of that and they can talk to their teams about it and inspire their teams around it, then it's also, I think, easier to get teams to scope in those next phases of work. And it's also easier then for designers to say, hey, listen, I'm actually pretty okay. This has met these key requirements that are important for usability to ship a feasible product. And I understand the phase that we're in here. And I also understand that there are going to be future phases scoped in for us to get to these other phases, which I care deeply about. There's no sort of magic approach to it, I think, but it is a conversation that has to have shared language, shared goals, and I think a lot of clarity about what good looks like and what great looks like. Because I think that's the other thing that I've sometimes experienced in teams that I've been a part of, where design is sort of treated like the gatekeeper to quality. You know, it's like we know what it is and we're the ones responsible for it. And we'll know it when we see it, but we can't really describe it or define it clearly, or the conditions in which we would feel, hey, we've hit a certain milestone in quality. Number one, I think it's dangerous in a company if a company believes that one team is responsible for the customer experience. I think cross-functional teams need to have a shared sense of ownership and responsibility for that experience. And so wherever we can sort of establish that, I think it's important. And I think one of the most important ways that we establish that is by giving people a shared vocabulary so that they can participate in conversations about quality. I don't think we get there when we talk about bars, you know, quality bars, which is, I think, often where conversations go when people don't have a clear sense of what is required to create a good experience. And so, you know, in previous companies and previous roles, you know, I've seen engineering teams or product teams frustrated because they're ready to ship something. And then sort of at the last minute, they hear from somebody that it doesn't meet our quality bar. And that's frustrating because they care about customers. They want to be a part of serving customers, but they feel excluded from the conversation because it's lacking in specificity.
We are going to take a short break to hear an exciting update from Design to Be. Design to Be has been researching and ideating on a digital product. We're super excited about what's in the works, but we need your help. We are looking to chat with heads of design, design managers, and IC designers to better understand the design process at your organization. If you are open for a 30-minute call with me and or Design to Be's co-founder and CTO, Keith Stevens, head to designtobe.com/app to join our waitlist. That's designtobe.com/app. After adding your name to the waitlist, we'll then follow up via email. Over a short call, we'll share what we're building, get your feedback, and learn more about your team's design process. These calls directly impact the future of what we're building at Design to Be. So thank you for your support, and we're excited to continue to build Design to Be together. Now, back to the show.
So in this realm of creating a shared vocabulary, shared understanding, how would you recommend for folks to tactically start thinking about this and implementing this with their teams?
It can be scary, I think, for design and UX people. You know, I don't know if you remember this, but a few years ago, I don't even remember where it initiated, but there was some internet controversy because some person with a loud voice in the industry was like, everyone's a designer, you know, and this erupted in this, you know, very controversial, angry Twitter community conversation. I don't think everyone is a designer, for the record. I think design is a craft. I think designers, and when I say designers, I'm also being inclusive of researchers, content designers, front-end experts, creative technologists, you know, people who are focused and their particular skill set and expertise is really on driving the creation of the best experiences possible for customers. Primarily in my world, it's in a sort of digital environment. Although at Gusto, we're definitely thinking about sort of the software to service experience because our support team plays a really important role in looking after our customers. So I don't think we are all designers. However, I think we are all responsible for the customer experience when we're building a product. And so that means engineers, that means certainly product managers, I think data scientists. And I think the more a designer UX team can be inclusive and use techniques and language that helps others feel that sense of responsibility, get closer to customers, and feel like they are in a position to understand and advocate for what a good customer experience looks like, I really do think the better our software products end up being, the more they serve our customers. And then the more that our design teams can feel truly empowered in their roles because they're not sort of, you know, fighting that battle about, you know, what it is that we're even trying to do here and what is it that really drives us and drives our decisions and what really matters. And I think fundamentally it is that experience the customer will have, their ability to complete their jobs, their ability to feel seen, their ability to feel like an experience feels made for them, even if it's actually made for thousands and thousands of people. And all of those things require a cross-functional approach. And I don't think we do ourselves any favors when we position ourselves in an organization as the only people who are responsible for those customer outcomes and that customer experience, the only people who truly understand the customer. One of the things that we're doing at Gusto is we have a great head of research, this woman named Gloria Asardu. And she's working on a variety of programs. On one end of the spectrum, programs that are just designed to build empathy and connection. So those aren't about research. They're not about getting rigorous insights. They're literally about helping people who work at Gusto connect with and talk to customers and hear about the world of running a small business and what that's like and what they worry about and what they're happy about and what they're excited about, just to build that sense of empathy and connection. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we have our research projects led by our research team, led by people who understand how to approach the craft of research. And those people are, you know, working on some of our riskiest, most strategic and important questions to get really good insights to our teams that they can use to de-risk and make great decisions. But I think that is one of the ways that a company, whether you have a great head of research or you have no research, I think that's one of the things that a company should think about is, you know, what is that sort of spectrum of customer connection all the way up to how do we know what we know about our customers? Because in almost all cases, we are not our customers, but it's really easy to forget that and think that we are, especially because we're all up in that product and we think we know it so well. And it just takes one user research session to realize how many gaps we have.
Yeah, it really all does come down to language and folding folks in and ensuring that they are also part of this process moving forward. But yeah, so thank you so much for sharing. I'd love to dive a bit deeper on the idea of speed versus velocity for folks that maybe generally are familiar with both of the terms or not. And if you could provide a couple examples of how folks can think about balancing both of these.
Yeah. So I think in speed sort of cultures or speed-driven cultures. So I mentioned I started my career, one of my earlier jobs was back at Facebook. And when I was at Facebook, I refuse to call them Meta, they're Facebook. When I was at Facebook, one of the sayings that was very common in Facebook, and we had it all over our posters, was move fast and break things, you know? And so the message there is sort of speed at all costs. You know, your mandate is to move fast. It doesn't matter if you're breaking things. It's just to get to some goal as quickly as possible. And I think what we've seen, you know, in the last, 10 years is Facebook broke a lot of things. I broke a lot of things, I'm sure, when I was there. I don't think the goal should be speed at all costs. And I think especially at a company like Gusto, where we are dealing with businesses, mostly small businesses, who trust us with making sure their employees are paid accurately and on time. And for those employees, there's a huge risk if they don't get paid on time. You know, people are depending on their paychecks to put gas in their car, to buy groceries. You know, the stakes are pretty high. And so our mandate at Gusto is not to move fast and to break things, but we do recognize that velocity matters. Velocity being momentum in a certain direction. You know, so we want to be really clear about what we're trying to go towards, what our destination is, why that matters to our customers, and the difference it's going to make for our customers if we get there. And then we want to constantly find ways to move in that direction. So it's not speed at any cost. It's not speed for the sake of speed. It is movement towards a defined goal that is customer-centric and serves the customer. And to me, that is the real difference between this idea of speed at any cost, move fast and break things culture, and a culture that values velocity. Because inevitably, we are creative people on a design team, but we are not artists. You know, we are here to create value for our customers. And I think if we only focus on quality and we don't talk about velocity and don't see that as part of our mandate, then what can easily happen is we end up designing really potentially great solutions that mostly live in our Figma files that we talk about internally, but that are actually not adding a ton of value to our customers. I think the other value of thinking about velocity is that I think what it leads us to do is ship iteratively. So it leads us to be able to say, like, what is the most meaningful unit of value that I can give to the customer, which includes a quality experience, and how can I give that to them as quickly as possible? You know, how can I ship this small piece that will add value, learn, measure, and then move on to the next piece? And it doesn't mean that we don't have a picture of what our sort of bigger goal is. It doesn't mean that we don't understand, hey, like in 3 years, here's what we think this product should look and feel like, and here's what we think it should do. But it does mean that we can sort of get there over time and then adjust our aim and our understanding of what that ultimate goal looks like based on how our customers are experiencing the things that we're giving them on an iterative basis.
Thank you so much for sharing this breakdown. I'm curious then how quality, the layer of quality fits into speed and velocity, and maybe a couple examples of how you balance the notion of obtaining to a certain level of quality for the product experience at Gusto.
It was about a year ago now, we shipped some experience principles inside of Gusto. Our mission is for work to empower a better life. So we're aligned on that as a company. But what we found is, again, it goes back to shared language and sort of shared goals and a shared understanding of what we were trying to enable for our customers and what fundamentally mattered to us about the way we wanted our experiences to feel for our customers. And we also wanted to make sure that we were considering the holistic experience, including the service experience, the human side of what Gusto offers. And so, yeah, we launched some experience principles about a year ago. So there are things like consider all touch points, software to service, and the mandate to fail gracefully. So, you know, if a customer is going to encounter a barrier, make sure that you put a window or a door there, not a wall, you know, so that they understand how to move forward and solve their problem. Another example is we want to do the heavy lifting for our customers. So we want to make sure that we are guiding them to solve their problems rather than just sort of presenting them with a bunch of information that they then have to parse and make decisions about how to move forward. But I think if anybody has ever done experience principles in their company, they'll know that it's really easy to launch them and then never refer to them again. You know, you have this like big moment and you make some stickers and some posters and then that's it. Nobody ever looks at them again. What we've done is we have put in place some experience principle metrics. They're not a one-to-one mapping to every single experience principle that we have, but we've identified some metrics that we believe are a really important signal of how we're doing against our goals for the experience collectively. And so this is something that we look at cross-functionally as, you know, product, engineering, design, and data teams. We review them asynchronously once a month. We create this report and we comment on the report and we resolve issues. And then every quarter, we look at the shape of how our different teams have done across that quarter against these metrics that we believe are a real signal of our experience quality. And again, like real cross-functional engagement, lots of buy-in up to and including, you know, our exec team about the fact that these matter, lots of amplification when teams make progress against our experience principle metrics, and gives us a tool to make sure that our principles continue to be referred to and continue to be used actively as a good tool to guide our products and trade-offs so that, you know, we're making aligned decisions and so that we have a, again, like a shared language and a framework to use. And I think it's part of getting back to that grounding and specificity about what quality looks like, you know, rather than having it be this sort of abstract goal that nobody can really define, but somehow we'll know it when we see it. Really creating sort of this language and these rituals that cross-functional teams can engage with together to aim in the right direction, you know, and we don't always hit our shots. We often fall short of where we aim, but it's really important that we don't have different members, different crafts on a team just aiming in completely different directions from each other. And to have that vocabulary and these tools, to have these kinds of conversations, because they all play a part in it. You know, my design team can do wonderful and thoughtful work, but, you know, if their engineering team isn't aligned, if it's not connected to the product strategy, there's very little that we can do to move these things forward. So anything that I can do to flatten that sort of hill for my team so that they're starting from a common place with the people that they work with cross-functionally, I think the more energy then we can spend on building great experiences rather than negotiating what those terms even mean.
Completely. And I just really want to underline exactly what you just said of really the more energy that we can spend on building great experiences rather than negotiating these terms and going back and forth will really help elevate the products that we build. So with that, I'm curious how you think about cross-functional alignment and maybe some examples about how you and the folks at Gusto go about doing so.
Yeah, I mean, I think the right first question is, are we aligned on what we're trying to do here and what matters? And maybe in a small company, in a really small team, maybe that comes really naturally, you know, but I think as a company scales, as a team scales, assuming that that alignment exists and not having the conversation, I think what that results in is people who are working based on assumptions and not actually based on facts. So I'm a big fan of, number one, even the least hierarchical company has some kind of system and rules about how it works and how it operates and how it makes decisions. And ignoring that will not get you anywhere. So make those rules, make those systems visible. You know, talk to your teams about how trade-offs are being made. Write down some statements about what you believe are important in specific terms about the kind of experience you want to create for your customers and see if people agree with them or where they disagree with them. Where they disagree with them, have conversations to try to resolve some of that disagreement and that tension and see if you can even get to two or three things that you're all really aligned with, that you all really believe in terms of the kind of experience you want your customers to have when they're using your product. And I think if you can just start to build that muscle, it will make it much easier to have disagreements, to make trade-offs, and to be able to point out when there is friction, when there is misalignment, and to kind of make it safe and comfortable to do that if you're having these conversations up front. And I really do think if you make some space to have these conversations with your team, it will accelerate your velocity going forward. It's not my expression. Our CEO, Josh, uses it all the time. You need to sometimes go slow to go fast. And so I think investing a little bit of that time up front to define kind of like the rules of engagement and the values and what you're shooting for, what you're aiming at, I think can really accelerate your ability to move fast in a common direction later on as you are working together.
And can you share an example of possibly a time recently at Gusto where you and the team put this into practice?
So there's a really actually good recent example at Gusto where there was a team of, or there is a team, there's a couple great engineers who, I don't even know how this originated, but they started looking under rocks and they were like, wow, we're actually seeing more crashes in our software than we would like to see. And so they took initiative, they looked under those rocks and they made that visible. So they were like, hey, is this intended? Like, are we comfortable with this? And if we're not comfortable with this, what are we going to do about it? And so I think the first thing was they noticed a problem. They noticed something that maybe people weren't aware of. Maybe people didn't think it mattered. They weren't sure, but they made it visible. They pointed it out. They gave us some really good specific information about the impact it was having on customers. And then they prompted the discussion of, okay, so now what? So now we see it. We agree that this is a gap. What are we going to do about it? What are we actually willing to do? What are we going to invest? What are we going to shift so that we can actually fix this issue? You know, and we're early stages in it, but, you know, we're actually adding an experience principle metric around this because we recognize that when our software crashes, that is a dead end for our customers. And one of our experience principles is no product dead ends. That's something that we have said we believe in. And so now we've actually got the specificity and some of the data that allows us to track that and make sure that we're trending in the right direction. And so we give teams that visibility, we can give them that specificity, and we have said, hey, we actually think this really matters. And so now they have sort of the ability to invest in it in a way that they didn't before, when it was a problem that most people were just not very aware of.
I want to shift to like one closing question for folks. If you could ask one thing of the audience for them to get started on, one action that they can take after they take out their headphones, press pause, what would it be?
I think I would say, like, what is the hill you're willing to die on? What is the thing that you believe very strongly is non-negotiable, you know, from an experience perspective? And is there anything like that for you? I think quite often we join teams and companies and we throw ourselves into sort of their culture and the way that they work. And I think it's really important to go into any role or any team with a strong sense of what you value and what matters to you in the work that you're doing. Not because you can go in and impose that on everybody that you're working with, but because it gives you the basis with which to have the kinds of trade-off and alignment conversations that I'm talking about. It's also really important if you're interviewing for a job, because if there are certain things that are really, really important to you and that you value, and a company that you're going to fundamentally doesn't value those things, it's really important to sort of try to shake those things out of the tree before you go into a new role and kind of commit yourself to a company. So I think, like, what matters most to you? What are the hills you are willing to die on? And fundamentally, like, what are your values in terms of the kind of work you want to do?
Amazing. Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Amy, for joining. It was a delight to connect. And I know that I and folks listening got immense value from our conversation. So thank you so much for your time and joining the show.
Thanks, Rachel.
That wraps up another episode of Designed to Be Conversation. Thank you so much for listening. If you're curious to learn more about Design to Be, head over to designtobe.com. That is designtobe.com. If you enjoyed this episode, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you may listen. Or share this episode with a fellow designer, your team, or on social. These are all excellent ways to support the show. And as always, thanks so much for listening.